This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. The Cincinnati Charter Committee is credited with helping to end corruption at City Hall in the 1920s. Many of the reforms it championed, including the city manager form of government, remain in place today. But the influence of the Charter Committee has come and gone since it was formed in 1924. This hour, we'll discuss the history of the Charter Committee and its future in city politics. You can join the conversation. Our phone number is 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Joining us in the studio, Michael Goldman, who's the chairman of Charter's Executive Committee and convener of the Charter Committee, and Mary Fitzpatrick, who's been with Charter for more than 50 years, formerly serving on the board and working at City Hall for various Charter Committee council members. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
I think to start off, we want to point out, and you like to point this out, we think of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Charter is not a party as compared to the Democrats or the Republicans.
Well, it's actually the longest existing independent party that has continually elected candidates in the United States, perhaps the world, but certainly in the United States. We're a nonpartisan political party in the sense that we do try to help get people elected to public office. So in that sense, we're a political party.
Let's talk a little bit about the history of this, because I've covered politics for over 30 years in Cincinnati, and every time somebody new comes to town and they're interested in politics, they ask me, well, what is this Charter Committee? And I go into the story about, you know, the bad old days before charter government, when government was corrupt and run by political bosses. And then in the mid-1920s, basically the city was bankrupt. And along came a young lawyer by the name of Murray Seasongood. Can you tell us what happened then to make this big sea change in government?
Cincinnati responded to the kind of horror that was going on in many, many cities around the country. You know, in many places, as the cities became more powerful, parties became in control of the thing, and there were bosses. In most cities, the bosses are Democrats. We are Cincinnati. We are conservative. Here we had a Republican boss, and he actually lived in New York. So it was a really kind of weird and wonderful world. And so Cincinnati responded to this in a way that I like to think of as typically Cincinnati, namely a ton of people eventually, when push comes to shove, they can get together and make things happen. And a very diverse group of people finally were fed up. Partially, there were Democrats who just couldn't get into office at all. They were frustrated because they couldn't get in. And there were Republicans who were intellectuals. There were Republicans, people who had come back from the First World War fighting to save democracy, and they just hated a terrible thing. And then there were intellectuals. There were progressives. There were lots of people. There was a black community that nobody paid any attention to at all. So all of these people knew that things were not going well. They came together. They worked things out. They developed what was then a brand new concept, city manager kind of form of government. And they passed a change in the charter, which is the way the city is formed. And that's why they were called the Charterites, because they proposed the charter. But they did then this really odd thing. Instead of having, you know, we've now got this wonderful reform, the city's going to be marvelous, and we'll go away. They didn't. They stayed. Now, they didn't. As Mike pointed out, they said, we're not a party, we're a committee. And in the beginning, you know, they wouldn't even go to City Hall, kind of. It was at least some of them wouldn't. It was kind of that we are kind of above the fray. But the big thing, that the thing that they did that made this work is they said, we have got to get everybody in this act. We have to be nonpartisan. And when you get right down to it, the thing that makes a difference between charter and the reason it's still going is that it is nonpartisan. They appeal to people all over, all parts of the city, all ethnic groups, all religious groups. And they actually said, all of us together, let alone political groups, we've got to work together. And it worked. And it worked for a long, long time with charter absolutely in charge. It's still working today.
Well, there was a very long period of time where charter would run slates of candidates and have a majority on city council. The Democrats didn't even run slates of candidates in the 40s and the 50s. People like Jack Gilligan, who recently passed away, was a true blue Democrat, but he was elected to city council in the 1950s as a Charterite.
Exactly, because at that period in time, when we're talking about at the end of the 20s is when these reforms came in. And then for just a couple of years, I don't know, 5 years or something, Murray Segan got good, who was a Charterite, was the mayor. After that, you had a long period of time when you had other people coming and going. But if any Democrat was ever going to get elected at all, it was as a Charterite. And that's what the Charter Committee was.
But the basic principles were city manager, form of government,
yes.
A mayor who did not have executive powers, a 9X system of electing council where the top the proportional representation originally where people ranked their choices for city council 1 through 9. And then it was a somewhat complicated method of distributing votes until you came up with 9 elected council members. Marion Spencer once told me that, explaining proportional representation was kind of like explaining how your TV set works. You don't really know. You just turn it on and then there it is.
But the whole concept behind proportional representation and the reason why the original reform was pushed it so hard was it is a way to absolutely guarantee that you have represented on an elective council representatives of different viewpoints. That's what proportional representation does. That's what it did do. And so it provided a way to get into a council that had been 99% just one thing, Republicans, and then it allowed the possibility for other people to get involved. Now, there are other ways of doing that perhaps now. And as you know, we don't have PR anymore, and we have survived, and we have continued to elect people who can represent diverse viewpoints.
But proportional representation also allowed African Americans to be elected.
Right.
And women to be elected.
Yes.
And in the end, it went away because the Republicans had put an issue on the ballot in 1959. To do away with proportional representation. And part of the reason was because Ted Barry, one of the great African-American leaders of the city, was about to become mayor. Is that not correct?
I can remember, and I'm talking too much, but I do remember how you could walk around the city and you'd find people in a panic. That black man. That Negro was the term that might end up being mayor. Yes, and that was the same kind of terror tactic that is sometimes used by people ad infinitum. It's racial and it's nasty. And no question, that was what underlaid the attempt to get rid of PR. Happily, in Cincinnati, partially because of political maturity, partially just demographics, we now have we can get good representation from the African-American community here in council. At the time PR was put in place, that wouldn't have been possible. So really what the Charterites did when made it possible for blacks to be represented on council when there was no other way it was going to happen. Now there are other ways it can happen.
Before we get too much into the reform part, I want to go back when we were talking about the history. When we hear this, corruption and incompetence in the 1920s with these political bosses, can either one of you give me an example of what we're talking about? What kind of incompetence? What was happening that was so terrible that this needed to be reformed? Some examples.
Do you want to do the street?
Well,
you do go.
I think there were a few things that, and Mary might be able to speak a little bit better to this, but the things that have been passed down to me from my parents, who, by the way, were very involved in the Charter Committee as well. Number one, you had the boss of the party who was not an elected official. He was a party boss, and he literally did not live in Cincinnati. He lived in New York. And city contracts, in other words, the taxpayer money, was being doled out for all city jobs to strictly a very small group of friends of that political boss or his underlings. And so my understanding is that, from things – like paving the streets, all the, you literally had to pay homage to those bosses in order to get access to any of those kinds of contracts. And as a result, those companies generally, or the people who were doing the work, were tended to be incompetent and were not particularly ethical in the way they ran their businesses. I'm not saying it was 100% that way, but
it was bad. We were regarded as the most corrupt city in the country, which was something to do.
At the Charter Committee, we actually have some old headlines from the early 20s, news articles from national newspapers that ranked Cincinnati as the most corrupt city in the United States.
One little personal story that goes back, I do not go back to this time, although I do go back a long time, not to the 20s. But Mary Ellen Heinz, who was a very good friend of mine, had a father named Victor Heinz, and he was typical of some of those early Charterites. He was a young man who'd gone off and fought in the First World War, and he'd come back, and people often sometimes called him Captain Heinz because of that. And he was an ardent Republican, and he saw what was going on in the city he loved, and he thought, we've got to fix this, and we can do this if the right people get in, and people who really care about the city and not about just making money off of themselves, we can make this better. So he and a whole group of them, they decided they were going to get in, they were going to become involved in this dirty political game. They were going to be politicians. They were going to take over the party. And he ran for precinct exec, which is the lowest thing you can run for. And he ran, and the day on election day when they counted the votes, he didn't get one vote. And he used to say, I always thought my mom voted for me, and I'm absolutely certain I voted for myself. So these men who truly, and they were all men in the very beginning, that really wanted to reform from within, that was their goal, figured they couldn't do it. That, you know, when they tried to get into the party and tried to take over and represent what they believed the Republicans should be. So that's when you talk about Charter in the beginning, it was these real reform Republicans and progressive idealistic Democrats and other Democrats who just wanted to get elected, that combination of people.
We are discussing the history and the future of the Cincinnati Charter Committee, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. Today we're talking about the Charter Committee of Greater Cincinnati. Our guest, Michael Goldman, who's the chairman of Charter's Executive Committee and a convener of the Charter Committee, and Mary Fitzpatrick, who's been with Charter for more than 50 years, formerly serving on the board and working at City Hall for various Charter Committee council members. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. And Dan is calling from Clifton. Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a point about locating the charter movement a little bit in the broader history of the United States and in what was called the progressive movement of that period from around 1910 into the almost to the 30s. And the progressive movement was a movement of which the Charter Committee formed a part, which was really aimed at breaking the power of those big city machines, as was said earlier. The Republican one here and the Democratic Party in other cities, and the Socialist Party, which was quite strong in several Ohio cities in that period of the 1910s. That is, these big city machines responded to the needs of immigrants, of lower-class people, working-class people, of the poor. They sometimes responded in ways that were corrupt, but they responded in a way that was neglected by the Republican Party in general, though, you know, Cincinnati's this exception there. But the desire, these progressive machines, the new progressive movement, was generally made up of people who came from the upper middle classes. They were lawyers. They were technocrats. They were part of a kind of intellectual elite who thought that they knew what was best. They wanted to reduce the size of city government, to get rid of the large city council. They wanted to take the power away from popularly elected mayors. So while the Charterites later will have, I think, a good effect in Cincinnati city government and in Cincinnati politics, and particularly on the race issue at times, their origins are in a very elitist sentiment that is hostile to the lower classes and wants to break that power of working class people in the city, that lawyers and technicians and professors know what's best.
What about that? I mean, that's a criticism that was present back in those days. And I have heard, you know, in subsequent years, the same kind of thing that somehow charter is an elitist organization, that you talk about good government and the Democrats on one hand and the Republicans on the other hand look at you and say, what do you mean? We're for good government, too. We just have different ideas about it.
The proof is in the pudding. What the caller said is true. It was interesting. You know, they mm-hmm. were the intellectuals who thought we've got to change things. But if you look at what Charter did, because the thing that Charter did was peculiar, they stayed, you know, they decided they were going to run candidates, and they have run candidates now since 1927, whenever. And if you look at what the kind of candidates they ran, the first black mayor of Cincinnati was a Charterite. The first woman mayor of Cincinnati was a Charterite. When you talk about the names of people who did things for this country, Bobby Stern, when you talk to women in terms of women's rights or care for the children, when you talk about African Americans, Marian Spencer, I think, we were hoping could be here today because she's got vast expertise in this matter. She was a charter. She is, not was, is a Charterite. These people represented not only just blocks of people who voted for them. They represented things, people who had real needs, and they brought those needs to council, and they dealt with those needs. That's what they did.
Margo?
Well, I'm not going to disagree with the caller's historical perspective. Yeah. I think all that's valid. But I would take issue with the one aspect of charter being an elitist organization, or the origins were elitist, and maybe the implication is it continues to be, and so therefore it doesn't have an impact on anybody but the intellectual elite and the upper middle classes. I just don't agree with that, and I just cite one story that really got me involved in charter, because it wasn't my parents. Like a lot of kids growing up in the 60s and 70s, I kind of rebelled against anything my parents thought was valid. I just didn't have any interest in what charter. And I wasn't living in Cincinnati for quite a long time. When I came back, I was invited to a charter get-together, and the person whose house was being held was a charter board member whose father had been a painter. And I don't mean painting art. He was a house painter who could not get work all through the teens and 20s. He'd been a veteran of the First World War, came back unemployed, was very frustrated, couldn't get any city work. There was any time he was posted, respond, he couldn't get any work. When the city reforms came through, he was able to find work because the contracts were doled out in a much more fair manner. And this is my point is this, that Charter's origins and its existence today is not based on some elitist intellectual notion. Good government is not it's not some concept of purity. The point of it is it affects people's lives. It absolutely affects people's lives, from people that are impoverished to the middle class to the upper class. Everybody is affected by better government, whether it's streets that are being paved more regularly, getting down to the infrastructure aspect of how municipal governments operate. I couldn't disagree more with someone who believes that, the charter movement and the charter's existence is based on, some elitist, pure, good government concept. It really is because it affects people's lives. That's why we exist today.
And I think if you go back to the original reform in that charter, which is still there, which we didn't mention, one of the things was bringing in civil service. The concept that we ought to have in government people who are there because they're good, not because they came out of a big elite school, but because they're good at what they do. That concept which leads to much better kind of government than just friends coming in, is very much part of what charter's been about. And again, I'm back to this concept that charter really has been for a nonpartisan approach to trying to solve the problems. And there aren't, you know, when you get right down to it, the leaders in this city for who've been attempting to promote women's rights and gay rights and African-American rights, they have been charterites. And they have done it year after year after year after year. And they have a very proud record on not just saying we think these things should happen, but making them happen.
Mary, I wanted to pick up on something you were talking about, that charter not only did these political reforms, but they didn't go away. And when I was reading the material to get ready for this, one thing that I didn't know that the charter was responsible for was this idea of a master plan. Can you talk about that master plan and what it did for the city?
I will say what I can say, and Mike, you got it, because the master plan was extraordinarily important. Now, practically nobody who's listening today is probably old enough to remember what the city used to look like, but some people remember the riverfront when it was just one gigantic junkyard. It was just a junkyard. That was what it was.
The bottom.
And it was, you know, and that made perfectly good sense. People, nobody thought much about it. Charlie Taft was really behind it, and this was an example of what Charter has done repeatedly. He helped motivate a lot of citizens. Some of them were Democrats, some of them were Republicans, and some of them were business people, some of them were environmentalists, some of them were people who were interested in this little part of town or that little part of town, to actually look at what the city was like. Now, when I was a little girl in the middle, that was a long time ago, it was a very dirty city. It was very black. Now, it's not all the buildings are not now filthy dirty. That's because of the Clean Air Act and the rest of that. It wasn't, you know, the city couldn't do that. That was a bigger deal than ours. But we could do something about making our gorgeous riverfront look better. It didn't have to be a junkyard. We could do something about trying to get the people downtown, where there were big money people, to be aware of what we needed to make to protect the downtown and also be aware that the neighborhoods had to be developed. So the master plan was something that brought together people from many, many walks of life and many, many perspectives and developed a concept that has resulted in a huge redevelopment in Cincinnati and a huge change, most of which is very beautiful.
Michael, did you want to add anything to that? I think something else was included in that was this idea of expressways to connect parts of the city with the downtown.
Right. I think Mary summed it up, you know, pretty well. The only thing I would add is, like most master or large, you know, visionary plans, they're so challenging that unfortunately a lot of things are, you know, they're too challenging politically. And I think a lot of the greater, maybe a lot of the important points of the master plan ultimately were ignored, but that doesn't take away from the from the value and the exercise of doing those kinds of plans. And some of it certainly was adapted.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can join our conversation 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Again, 513-419-7100. And from Josh, an emailed question: does the committee want to see proportional representation come back, and are they trying to make that happen someday?
Well, I think the short answer of to the second part is: is Charter trying to make it come back? I would say the answer is no. There are certainly members of our board who still see, and I would say I'm one of them who see the inherent value in the fairness of electing people via proportional representation. But I think I'm also a realist, and it would be impossible to bring proportional representation back, politically speaking. And there have been efforts. There have been several efforts.
There was a charter amendment several years ago.
There have actually been more. There have been three, I believe.
Right.
And one of the – in the late 80s was actually relatively close. And by relatively, I think it was something like 54% to 46%, which is, you know, not too shabby. But then the one after that was – not as close, and I think the energy was sort of sucked out of the, you know, the movement to to try again.
Would it have a better chance if it was easier to understand? I mean, the last time it was on the ballot, we tried to do a talk show to explain it, and even that's hard to try to explain it.
Yes, I think the answer is yes. I think explaining it is difficult, and I think the other, as I recall, and my memories faded a little bit on those last two campaigns. But if there were other places of significance, there are a few municipalities that still use proportional representation in the states, and it is, by the way, pretty widely used in the rest of the world. It may not be exactly the same proportional representation that Cincinnati used for 30 years, but it's pretty similar. But if there were significant, well-known cities that used it, I think that would be an easier sell. But I just think that makes it very difficult.
You get into the weeds in it so quickly. If you called it the transferable vote, it might make it better or make it worse. Because what it really means is that when you vote 1 through 9, at least one of your votes is going to be cast for somebody who gets elected. Whereas if you're not doing that, it's very possible you can go in and vote for a whole bunch of people and none of them get enough. So that was, there's many wonderfully Democrat with a small d reasons why this is a good thing.
Well,
it's so complicated.
And Mary points out maybe what politically, when I said it's difficult politically, which it really is, one of the reasons I think it becomes so politically difficult is that the results of our elections in Cincinnati over the last 35 to 40 years, it's easy to point at those and say, well, it really isn't necessary anymore because we are getting a diverse group of people being elected to council. So, I mean, the easy response to PR is proportional representation. Why do we need it? Because look at who's getting elected today.
Somebody else emailed, I think it was a couple weeks ago, the Enquirer did a list of candidates by neighborhood, and there was a point that some city neighborhoods, even with 21 candidates on the ballot, don't have any candidates, that would represent them if they were elected. Now, PR wouldn't necessarily help with that either, correct?
That's right.
I mean, it might help with the diversity of a council, but it doesn't necessarily help with a neighborhood being represented or not.
I think you'd have to go back and look at the results of all those elections, but I there's no reason to think that, geography could play as big a role theoretically as race or gender, but I think you're right that geography probably would play almost no role.
Well, you'd have to almost go back to some kind of district election system in order to get that kind of representation.
I think the theory behind the big reform, which was to go from a very big council, it was 27 or 31 members, a batch of members on city council, to 9, was that when you had what was happening then, and this is potential, you had people who had their own little parochial interests and they didn't care about anything else, and they could be manipulated. Whereas if you have somebody who has to get elected by the whole city, hopefully they will try to appeal to more and more people. And that concept that it's a good idea to try to get a batch of people supporting you instead of just a little tiny group who can gum up the government, I think is a good principle, and I wish it was operating currently in Washington.
Let's go back a little bit of history here. 1960s, the Republicans kind of came back and dominated city council. 1971 through 1985, and I was around for part of this, the Democrats and the Charterites had a coalition. They ran, they endorsed each other's slates of candidates. They always held a majority. And as I understand it, in those days, of course, the mayor was elected by council itself. And as I understand it, they used to meet in Bobby Stern's house, and one group would go to one room and one group would go to the other room, and then they'd decide who was going to be mayor. And they ended up passing it back and forth for all those years until John Wethy, who was Democratic Party chairman in 1985, said no more. We're splitting off from charter. Now, did that cause charter to suffer a real blow when that coalition was broken up with the Democrats?
Well, it was really the second makeup of the Democrats. Originally, the Charter Committee, there were the on the ballot, as you well know, our ballot is non. That was another reform.
Yeah.
It didn't say anything because, again, the Charterites wanted
ballot.
Nonpartisan. And so it didn't say anything, but everybody knew these are the Republicans, these are the Charterites. And some of the Charterites would be Republicans, some of them were Democrats, but they were all Charterites. And that went on for a very, very long time. That idea that we weren't going to do that anymore in the late 50s when John Gilligan had been elected as a Charterite, but he and some other lovely people decided that the Democrats were now strong enough that they could go on their own. And they broke up. They left Charter. And then for a while we were running in the 50s and 60s, Charterites, Democrats, and Republicans. And the Democrats did not do very well. So in the early 70s, political wisdom dictated that if we're going to get back in power, we're going to work together. And you have in the 70s what was no longer just the Charter Committee that had all these people, but the coalition. It was the Charter Democratic Coalition. And that coalition produced some really fabulous people. But at this point, they didn't think of themselves just as Charterites. They were one or the other. And what they did, every election, they would decide who was going to be mayor, and they would share. The Democrats would have one year of the two-year terms, Charterites, one year, another year.
We're discussing the role of the Charter Committee of Greater Cincinnati in city politics, and we'll continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. We're talking about Cincinnati's Charter Committee and its past, present, and future role in city politics. Our guest, Michael Goldman, who's the chairman of Charter's Executive Committee and convener of the Charter Committee, and Mary Fitzpatrick, who's been with Charter for more than 50 years, formerly serving on the board and working at City Hall for various Charter Committee council members. Again, you're invited to join our conversation, 513-419-7100, or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Back in 1999, Cincinnati sort of changed its form of government slightly with this to create a stronger mayor system where there was a direct election of the mayor. And I believe the charter supported that. Do you think that has worked, and has it worked the way that it was supposed to work?
Boy, that's a tough question.
Well, there was a lot of pushback when Charter became involved in that, was there not?
Well, I was actually not in Cincinnati for those years,
yeah.
But what I know is, and maybe Mary can remember more of what was going on inside the Charter Committee at that point. From what I understand, there, you know, it was a pretty controversial within Charter's own, you know, membership.
I think it would be fair to say that the Charter had a happy time with the way the city had been formulated, namely that we had the council would get elected, and then they would decide who the mayor was going to be. And that almost always meant whoever had the majority would elect one of their own members. There may have been a time that didn't happen. I don't know when that did, if it did. But mainly that's what happened. And then the mayor would be pretty ceremonial. And it worked. There were people, many, and there were Charterites. So, I mean, some of them, Arne Bortz, who had served as a mayor at the city of Cincinnati and is a Charterite, felt that this was, you know, that things had changed since the 20s, and particularly, well, lots of reasons, we had to do this. In the original change for the somewhat stronger, and you're right, it's not a strong mayor. We don't now, despite whatever, we have a stronger mayor than we did before, form of government. I know Bobby Stern, who was the ardent Charterite, felt that this proposal did allow for the council to remain strong and do many things. I think some people feel that maybe it hasn't worked out quite the way people thought it might. In other ways, it's worked out. It's been fine. The problem with any form of government is there are innumerable ways you can do it, and it all depends on who you elect to do it. That's what's going to make the difference. And I think it's very important that we have a good mayor, and whatever form of government we have, it's important that we have a good person, and a good person will make it work.
Roxanne Qualls served as mayor in the 1990s under the top vote-getter system. And she was obviously a Democrat. She had charter support. And after she left council in 2007, Jim Tarbell was term limited out, and he left early, and charter put her back on council. And now she is a candidate for mayor. And so I assume that charter is behind her candidacy for mayor.
That's yes. Charter has endorsed Roxanne for mayor.
While Roxanne served in her most recent time in council, the last couple of years, many years, she has represented, I think, some of the things that are very important to Charterites. She has a grave concern about the neighborhoods. She has a grave concern about people who sometimes get the short end of the stick. But she also has a very practical recognition that you've got to have economic development to make anything work. And so I think those concepts are things that Charter had been very supportive of.
But if you're a person who wants to run for city council and you want the Charter Committee endorsement, are there principles, ideals, positions on issues that you have to adhere to in order to receive that?
Well, when you say have to adhere to, that's strong.
Yeah.
But I would say there are principles that we certainly hope, somebody who wants Charter's endorsement would adhere to. And there certainly are stories. There are stories of council members who get elected as a Charterite. And,
yes.
And once they're in office, they tend to sort of migrate.
Do as they please.
They do as they please.
And that's
But what are those principles? What is the core of it?
Well,
looking for?
And this is I would say maybe the first and leading principle is independence, that means independent thinker, but it also means independent of parties. So it's not a Republican or a Democrat when it comes to city government. Certainly, as far as your state and national affiliation, I've always said when I was president of Charter, you check those affiliations at the door because we understand that, of course, our board members and membership are Republicans and Democrats when it comes to, state and national politics. But so independence and being nonpartisan does have its downside in that, we do not try to tell – we, meaning the charter leadership, does not try to tell council members how to vote and what to do. But we hope they would adhere to the, principles of accountability, being the highest ethical standards, and transparency is also incredibly important.
I think one of the things that's happening right now in Charter that's very encouraging is that there are lots of young people who care tremendously about the city. And they have invigorated, I think, our thinking in many ways. And when we went through the endorsement, first of all, Charter has its own candidates, people whom we were not supposed to mention, so we won't, particularly right now. But, people who have been Charterites for a long time. But they also... the charter principles are not, other people can share them. Everybody would like good government. But people who are willing to move across the aisle or work across the aisle, who are willing to act nonpartisanly even if they have a partisan affiliation, people who really believe in transparency in government, people who really believe you've got to have effective, honest government. That's the whole thing we've never even talked about. We have honest government in this city, despite all of our faults. There are cities where you still have to pay bribes to get anything done. In Cincinnati doesn't do that. And this is a tradition that goes way back, and it was part of the whole charter bit. But anyway, and we want people who want to see that going on. And in fact, this year we have endorsed, as you probably know, people who are both Republicans and Democrats as well as Charterites, because these are all people who want to make the city a better city, and they recognize that they're not just running so they can run for some other office later on. They want to make the city better.
513-419-7100 and 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Dan is calling from North Avondale. Dan, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to correct Michael Goldman's recollection of the numbers on the elections for proportional representation. He got the first one right in 1988. Proportional representation got 45% of the vote, and it was close. It was also close in 1991. It was about 45% then as well. The next time it was on the ballot was 2008, and it got 47.25%. So it may not be as hopeless as Mr. Goldman was making it sound.
You want to respond to that, Michael?
Well, I'm certainly happy to be corrected about the 1991. I don't recall there being that proportional representation had been on the ballot since then, but and certainly not in 2008. I don't know what that's – I'm not – I'm just,
I don't recall it either. But.
I think the bottom line about PR is there are so many really horrible problems facing the city right now where energy and thought has to go about the budget – about the pension things, about how we have to totally, this is one of the things Roxanne can talk about, totally change how we look at doing a lot of things. We have to start thinking outside the box to get the money to make the city all the things it can be.
Well, I think that
and that's where we're putting our efforts.
I think that led to a question I was thinking about. It seems to me that Charter was born in the early 1920s when the city was in debt. Is it time for a Charter rebirth with the looming problems in the pension system and the structurally unbalanced budget? Is this your time to make yourself new again?
Well, I think that that may be precisely the reason why you know, those of us who are still very involved and the folks that are new to Charter who are coming to Charter over the last couple of years, that might be what is driving some of these the new younger and I don't want to say always younger because sometimes they're not so young chronologically, but they're new to Charter. And I think perhaps that is the reason. I think that, Howard might be able to – I don't know if anybody else sitting around the table or anybody listeners would appreciate this, but I'm sure Howard, being a baseball man, knows the book Moneyball.
Sure.
And I think there's something very Charter-like in – I think the theme of Moneyball, it's about baseball and how small market teams can compete if they really study the data – as opposed to, you know, trying to look at things, you know, from a historical, perhaps outdated perception of baseball. And I think that maybe I'm going far afield here in the analogy, but I think that one of the things that always was true about Charter, and I think we need to rededicate ourselves to it, and I believe a lot of the younger and newer members who don't are not interested in partisan politics, they want to see things done. They're interested in objective, data-driven solutions that bring real results for, you know, whether it's entrepreneurs and business people, for, you know, young families that, you know, we want to make sure we continue to attract to our city. If we want to have a vital city, you need to have that, you know, that part of your demographic makeup. And, you know, Cincinnati is relative, you know, is sort of a small market city. It compared to places like, you know, Boston and Chicago, we do have to think a little differently. Times are different. Money is going to continue to be tight, and our budgets need to be looked at from a new perspective.
Does Charter have any – I mean, clearly the reforms that you pushed in the 1920s were done through Charter amendments. What about this idea, though, of amending the Charter for things like a ban on red light enforcement cameras or – there's now a ban in the city charter against any kind of solid waste fee. Is that getting too – some would say those are policy decisions that don't necessarily belong in the city's charter.
Well, Charter took positions against those charter amendments. We, as an organization, we do not believe in governing by referendum. Not that we – Charter certainly believes in the right to – petition and referendum. That's how the whole charter movement and the progressive movement, as an earlier caller mentioned, that has to be maintained, that right. But to try to, in relatively narrow issues, to be part of the city charter, which is really our city's constitution, is we just believe that's inappropriate.
And Charter is aware, members of the Charter Board, that there are bits and pieces of the charter, the Cincinnati City Charter, that do need a little looking at. And there are people who are getting together – now, the campaign year is not a good year – but to seriously look at the charter and to decide how it needs to be updated to make it more
What are
useful.
Those? What would need to be looked at?
Some of the things I think that we need to look that the people, there are some peculiar little odd, you know how there are laws that are very peculiar that are so okay. And I wish I'm not allowed to mention, but anyway, that some of our council candidates are very, very au courant on that. I'm very aware of this and are able to see how sometimes little things can really affect how the whole city works. And it is important. Perhaps it is time for us to look at a whole lot of things, but we need to do it in a way that is what charter can bring to the table if we're going to look at really big, serious issues. And that is, it shouldn't be we're doing this so we're going to get somebody elected somewhere else or so we're winning favor with some party in some other part of the country. But we're going to get together all the people in this city on all sides of the political and economic and racial and religious lines who have a dog in the fight, and we're willing to work together to make it better. That's what we can do.
There's a couple of things in the charter. There's more than a couple, but there still are references in our charter that refer to, for example, this University of Cincinnati as a city university. I mean, that hasn't been true for, I think, over 40 years. That's never been true. So there's a lot of small updating. But there's also, you asked a question about, you know, is the new stronger mayor form of government really working? Howard's probably has his finger on this pulse. There are groups and forces within our city that are already trying to, formulate, new ways of electing the mayor, new powers. And instead of, having splinter groups working on that kind of thing, I think what Charter would like to do is bring together, a quote, for lack of a better term, a really broad range commission to really look at the whole city charter, which would include big things too, like the mayor. How's the mayor elected? What kind of power should the mayor have? So,
well, one of your candidates that you've endorsed, David Mann, who is also endorsed by the Democratic Party, is proposing a charter amendment to change the way that the mayor is elected, so that we don't have the September primary, that we have a field race in November, followed by 2 weeks later a runoff election of the two top vote getters. Does that appeal to Charter as a potential reform?
Well, I will say that Charter supported David's issued a press release after that primary that we had just a month ago when it cost the city somewhere around $400,000 and 5.6% or so. I'm not sure what the voters, but that very few voters turned out, and it seemed like that was, really a waste of money. So
3.68%.
Okay, thank you. Oh. Even worse.
Yeah.
So I mean, we agreed with David that that should be looked at, whether or not that is the precise specific change that should be made. I'm not sure, but it does make sense. I think what David said too was that second vote 2 weeks later would only take place if nobody got 50%.
Right. That's right.
And there are cities that do just that, yes. That if somebody gets 50% in a mayoral primary or general election, then it's over.
But what if we got down to a point where we had this commission and they came up with a real strong executive mayor system? Where would Charter come out on that?
If we have such a commission, we will have people who are going to represent what the current charter thinking is. And the current charter thinking, as I think it always is across the board on many, many issues. And I think that if we could get a really good commission, then they'd have to bring it to the charter board, and the charter board would have to decide how they were going to vote.
We've been talking about the history and the future of the Charter Committee of Greater Cincinnati with Michael Goldman, who's the chairman of Charter's Executive Committee and convener of the Charter Committee, and Mary Fitzpatrick, who's been with Charter for more than 50 years, formerly serving on the board and working at City Hall for various Charter Committee council members. And on our website, you will find a link to Charter, and you can learn a lot about the history there. It also has some old photographs and campaign signs that you can see, and you'll find a link to that on our site, WVXU.org. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Rick Andrus. With Howard Wilkinson, I'm Jay Hanselman.